And should be replicated. I'll say that again.
Yeah,
another.
But it never has.
No. Well, the closest I've come, Gord, is the Tony Dean panel, which recently made changes to the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and that was after 30 years, the first time we've made any fundamental changes. Tony ran the process as close to principle-based as I've been involved with. We had a consensus. It was implemented by the government unanimously, and they're in the process of, so the recommendations were approved unanimously, we're in the process of implementing. So it's gone pretty well. It wasn't formally designed that way, but the outcome, through a whole bunch of influence, and the activities we engaged in were very close to principle-based. And it worked very well, and everybody's supportive. Let's go do it. Right. So
I did some work with labor on something. I think it was workplace safety, a bit of a facilitation for them that was similar, but we didn't actually have terms of reference. WSIB wanted to rework their whole process. And
this is the big reworking they did a few years ago?
This would
and
be
part of it was accreditation. There's a bunch of pieces, right?
Yeah, a bunch of pieces. So I was about to be retained to do that, and eHealth came along, and then everybody had all the stuff had to be sent out to tender. It went to tender, and the whole thing just kind of fell apart. So it was really, real shame. I was looking forward to that. I thought that'd be really fun to work on.
Did that process, the EBR process, what were the costs? You were an employee of the province.
Yep.
Everybody else were volunteers.
Yep.
The folks from the NGOs, they didn't get anything?
Well, there was a, if I remember correctly, John, you may have a better memory on this one, is that the environment, you guys had your own network.
Yep.
The business guys had a network where they would go
pyramid, right?
Yeah, and report to their association. I think you had something like 400 people and companies you talked to.
Yeah.
And then the environmental fellows, Rick and Paul, came to us and said, we don't have the resources to reach out.
Right.
So we created, I think, the Ontario Environmental Network for them, gave them some money
yes.
to set that up so they could do, I think there was a bit of, I don't know exactly what the final strike, and do you remember what that was?
I do remember that they reported back to all the environmental groups.
Yeah.
They had regular meetings, and, you know, the most high-profile involved groups were coming and, you know, learning about what the discussions were that were going on in the task force process so that they could give them feedback and Paul and Rick could go ahead with confidence that they were representing, you know, the broader environmental movement.
Yeah, and I think the ministry gave them some money.
They did, but that's a very important dimension that we need to put on the record because it wasn't just the core group who was central.
No.
The fact that you had this network.
And we were constantly circling back with issues and getting feedback from this broader group.
Yeah, it wasn't a closed process.
No, not
it
at all.
It sounds like it was, because if you say there was a group of, you know, 10 or 15 people talking about this and deciding what would happen, it sounds very exclusive, but it wasn't.
Plus,
it wasn't
everything that the advisory committee had done in advance of our task force, we took all of those submissions in and went through them all and sorted them, and I think the support we have from the ministry was good on that to say, here's something you should read, here's a suggestion on that, or here are whistleblower comments from these particular groups.
And this is the advisory group for the class action?
No, advisory group that was running within the Ministry of the Environment.
For a Bill of Rights?
For a Bill of Rights.
Right.
The one that wasn't working.
Work, did it?
Didn't work, but there was a lot of paper sent in. I think there were 350 submissions that were passed on to us. Plus, you guys are going out to your 400 or whatever, the environmental guys are going out. I probably did 100 meetings on my own. Anybody would phone me, I'd go do a presentation. I remember driving to Bowmanville one night and speaking to some citizens group. McGuinty, when he was just an MPP, had me come to Ottawa. I flew up there and spoke to his constituents about the Environmental Bill of Rights and, gosh, like bar associations.
Oh, I came to one.
Sierra Club. Yeah, all over the place.
They weren't very happy, as I recall. They gave you a bit of a hard time.
Yeah.
Not enough access to courts. But the other thing that was clearly part of our discussion, too, is we didn't want to duplicate good process that existed today to reach out and get feedback or input from those that wanted to comment on environmental decisions, like through the EA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we very clearly said, if you got the EA process running, we're not going to fool with that.
So if something went to the EA and was exempted from any kind of process.
Yeah.
Was it your intention they would not have access to the EBR process? Because that's, in fact, how it is interpreted today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the normal way. So anything that nominally is involved in, under a class, a classier, which didn't exist originally, but under classier, and under usually an A level in the municipal classier, for instance, which has, which really has no public process, is exempt from the EBR. Or anything that is exempted from the EA is exempt from the EBR. So you have, so this is how it is interpreted.
I think it's being abused.
Yeah, I don't think that was a, that was our understanding. The understanding was if there was a better process, you use that.
Well, that and
Not both. Yeah.
But that's the implication one gets when one reads Section 32, but that's not how it's interpreted.
Something else that happened with the EBR, which I've had mixed feelings about over the years because people mentioned it to me, there were other advisory groups to the Ministry of the Environment that existed. For example, one is the Advisory Group on Environmental Standards. And one of the selling points, frankly, of the EBR within the bureaucracy was that we would be able to dispense with a number of these other sort of rather ad hoc groups, because now we'll have a process that will work for so many different things. And so that particular committee, for example, which was an advisory committee particularly on environmental standards, and I think, because I served on it as a member before I joined the, as a public servant, was a good committee, did very good work, had really good people on it. And I remember going down to speak with them as an ex-member of that committee, but now a public servant doing the EBR, saying, it's over, you know, we don't, we, this committee will not have to meet anymore. But I'm not sure that was always the right thing to
do. And was that committee costing the ministry anything?
No, nothing significant. No, people weren't paid. But at the same time, how was it supposed to fit in to a comprehensive consultation process that the EBR set up? Why did you need a special committee to look at environmental standards? Because any new environmental standard would go on the registry. There'd be the opportunity for discussion and so on.
I would almost think of them as a pre-vetting process. So they would do their work and post that on the registry.
Well, I think, I have never actually looked at it, but I think you'll find a number of such committees were abolished as a result of the EBR.
Wasn't really anticipated at our end.
Yeah.
You know, I should just mention for the history books that at our very first meeting, I think we spent the entire meeting, maybe not even reaching a consensus on this, but we couldn't define what we meant by environment.
Oh, yes.
We spent the whole meeting talking about it. What is environment? What's included? You know, everybody had all these different opinions, and I finally said, I remember, we need to have a working definition.
Yeah.
To stick with, just so we can move forward. We can't just keep going on this. So I said, is it air? Yes. Land? Yes. Water? Yes. And then Paul Muldoon said, and everything in between. The ecosystems. We said, okay, there's our working definition. But that was the first thing that we ever agreed on that allowed us to kind of go on to, okay, let's work, talk about something else for a while now.
Why wouldn't you have taken something, say, from the Environmental Assessment Act?
We looked at those.
It's much broader than that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why people didn't want it, I suppose.
Exactly,
it
yeah.
I mean, but I think it was the foundation, go back to the terms of reference and all this stuff, is it was so important for that to be done well and people agree to it. And it was done well. And I think we had reasonable people at the end of the day that knew we had terms of reference we would always come back to. And yes, there were 10 other things folks wanted to talk about and put in there, but they weren't likely going to happen, so we knew we had to keep focused on this and keep moving along, because we made a commitment, the government's made a commitment. We could get distracted, but it wasn't helpful, right? So we'd all come back and go, we're not talking about that, thanks for bringing it up again, right? Mm-hmm. We're going ahead with here, we're doing this, this is our job, please stop, you know, bringing this other stuff up, it's not in.
One of the things that I found really exciting about doing the work was being on the public service side of it, was knowing the legislative windows, because we really had to have our work done in such a way that a bill could get in first. And it really was important on the Class Proceedings Act the first time, but I was always conscious and used it a little bit as a pitchfork to for our work, was that if we're going to get certain legislative windows, we have to be done by certain times and move it along. And, you know, I remember the ministry, once it was sort of coming together, getting the press releases ready and bringing everybody down to the house. And we all had lunch with the premier in this little special dining room. Were you there for that? Yeah, and Ruth was there and Bud was there for that. And I remember in that lunch that you and Norm, a steward, made a very strong pitch for using the process on the labor. package. Yeah. And Premier Ray said, why wouldn't, at least, actually he said, it was the other way, he said, why wouldn't we use this process on other things? And we're all like looking at each other like, yeah. We've all been saying, use it on labor. Yeah. And he said, yeah. He said to me, send me something. I went back to the office after we were in the house being thanked and for our work. And then I went back to the office and I wrote it. It's like 10 pages. Here's how it would work. Here are the players. Went and sent it to the Premier's office. And I heard nothing.
No, it was intercepted.
And then I heard, got a letter from the Premier's office saying, thank you for your interesting suggestion. It has been referred to the Ministry of Labor for a response. And I never heard from the Ministry of Labor. But somebody spiked it, I guess.
Yeah, somebody spiked it.
Yeah. It was a shame.
That's why you got to get it in the hands of somebody who's literally close to the Premier.
Mm-hmm.
Going, mm-hmm. And you see, it would have come through the bureaucratic chain.
Yeah, I think well, I wrote it directly to the Premier.
That's almost certainly going to get it spiked.
Do you think we'd ever circle back after 20 years and use the same process and revisit what we've done?
Well, it's interesting. There is an EBR request for review of the EBR.
That's why I thought I'd bring it up.
That has been accepted by the Ministry of Environment for some months now.
Over a year now,
yeah. And we see, are aware of no progress whatsoever. And
get the task force back together.
We're all alive.
Well, someone submitted a request for a review.
Well, yes, and it was accepted by the ministry. It's to be done. It's supposed to be done. The last date I recall was November of this year. I think it's the latest. So
that makes some sense.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a, not a major problem for me, but somewhat of a problem because I'd like to do some stuff for the 20th anniversary, and certainly I don't want to run over top of what might be a thorough and proper review done by the ministry, right? Because, for instance, for the 10th anniversary, I did a bit of a review sponsored by myself.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have the task force come together. We know where.
Find Bob Anderson somewhere, wherever he might be.
He's probably on a beach somewhere.
Probably
playing golf.
On a sailboat. That's what I told Gordon.
Gordon, is there any aspect of the EBR you think we should be discussing that we haven't?
Well, I think we've touched on them. But I mean, this section 32, which I referred to earlier, is a major problem in that I think it's a misinterpretation of the intent of the task force and even the legislature.
This is
the one where if anything even touches the EA, like for instance, any approval at the Darlington nuclear plant, right, even off the non-nuclear side, is never posted on the Environmental Bill of Rights Registry for public consideration because the Darlington nuclear plant was exempted from the EA system. So from time immemorial, any water taking, any other kind of emission that is non-nuclear is never placed on any permit to take water for a municipality, for taking water, for drinking water, whatever, is never posted on the registry because it's construed a taking of water for drinking water by a municipality must be, by implication, part of a class environmental assessment for municipal works, a municipal class EA, it must have been in place, so therefore it's part of an EA, so therefore it shouldn't be subject to any kind of review or scrutiny. This is the breadth of the use of this so-called Section 32. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
The other is, we've touched on, is the statements of environmental values and the trouble getting them considered. We've had overt rejection where the Ministry of Environment went to court, who argued that they do not have to consider statement of environmental value, even though the Act says they do, with respect to instruments. And we went to court and fought that one out, and now, in fact, they do, but they're still resisting.
Yeah.
So those are, and then the fact of the quality of the statement of environmental values, which is what you alluded to, and I understand your argument that, the Act is a little unclear, but clearly the intent seems to be there, that by the very name, the statement of environmental values, that there are values that are to be considered, and so those are.
So the other part is the scope of the work or the responsibilities of this office, right? Was fairly narrow, particularly boring when you think about it. Was to watch over those, do they implement or not, versus other stuff. Because we assumed the ministry and everybody else was going to keep doing all the proactive stuff that they had been doing at one point, right? Wonderful stuff, and that things have changed, and that's not. And as Gord's been watching the ministry, or this role, watching the ministries implement EBR, I've been watching Gord, making sure he's doing his job and not stretching it beyond something else, right? So, but after a while, I've given up on that because because just the scope of the work is boring, and some of the work this office has done is quite exceptional.
Oh,
and
the reports
hasn't been,
are fantastic.
Not been done with anybody else, and really they've done a wonderful job. So I've stopped bugging Gord about, is that your job, you know, description? Right? So what's the basis of this part of the report? You know, so there is value in what you're doing, obviously.
But they expanded, I mean, no, under the Green Energy Green Economy legislation, yep. they expanded, yep. they amended the EBR, and yep. they added the responsibility report on, they formalized the one on the government's success in reducing greenhouse gases, and then they added the responsibility to report on energy conservation, energy efficiency, and all forms of energy. So that those were, you know, major and formative additions to the responsibility of this office. And
how many staff do you have now?
I have 23 staff now.
Remembering our discussions of how many staff the office would require.
What was the original projection?
I think we had 11, and then Eva came on. Well, Borgie became the commissioner, and she found a way of hiring 18, I think.
Yes, 18. Eva had 18.
Does that sound right? So she hired 18.
Plus some contract positions.
Okay.
In those days. And it started
so
off.
So that was... Yeah. But, I mean, you know, it's easy to imagine what it's going to take to run an office like this when you don't actually have to do it. And so when she sort of went through all the tasks and so on, did her assessment, she came up with a different number.
It was actually 17 staff, 18 this week. Okay. 18 positions. We have 24 positions now. But we had 18 all along, just till the Green Energy and Green Economy Act gave it the extra responsibility, and it got 6 more positions.
Okay.
So was there any truth to the rumor that they were talking about folding the Environmental Bill of Rights into the Environmental Protection Act? They were going to repeal it or merge it?
Never heard that.
Oh, that was a rumor. Someone called me and said...
You mean... Geez, not at the time.
The government... since the... I would say within the last 6 or 7 years, somebody I ran into said, hey, I hear they're going to repeal the Environmental Bill of Rights. They're just going to fold it all into one super piece of legislation. And I said, I don't think that a government could get away with that. How do you repeal bills of rights? Just
Well, the Harris government couldn't find a way.
Yeah.
But there was one thing that you said, I think was true, was that it was meant that this was the kind of lowest level of public scrutiny that was expected.
Yes.
And, you know, it was to cover off all the things that the public was not getting access to.
Yeah.
It certainly was never intended to, you know, let other things slip out without public scrutiny.
Talk about contrary to the spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that's exactly, that is true. And I think it's been very successful in that regard. I mean, there's a wide... And one of the complaints, I certainly heard, because, of course, I was in the ministry when this was 20 years ago, when this was done, so I was not foreign to what was going on. I remember for the Canadian Land Reclamation Association, I did the comments for the first round of Statement of Environmental Values, as an external commenter. But one of the complaints was that, you know, well, the vast majority of these decisions would be trivial and of no concern, which, of course, it is, but the registry works very well, and the vast majority of decisions draw no comments whatsoever. But I would suggest that one could not predict a priori which ones would get comments, and still to this day we get surprising how things, you know, system works well in that, you know, what seems to be innocuous decisions come forward, and all of a sudden there's a tremendous amount of public interest.
Also, we used to say, and I think what you're saying bears this out, that if you have more public scrutiny, you get better decisions.
Yeah, that's right.
But just because then when you scrutinize them, they're good decisions, doesn't mean the scrutiny wasn't playing a very important role.
Yeah, and I think the converse is true, too, is that the fact we get so few comments on what, you know, for those who have been around long term, could be controversial decisions, and we don't, means they were, you know, more thoughtful, or in a priori, they're in advance, they were made in more thoughtful decisions, so the public was not that concerned about them. But every once in a while, of course, we get... we've got one now. We got a 10,000, we call it, where we have 10,000 comments. Apparently, I haven't seen them yet, but apparently the suggested amendments, the Endangered Species Act, is up over 10,000 comments. So.
Well, that you might predict.
Yeah, that one you might predict, but it's only one of four or five that have achieved the 10,000 mark in 19 years.